You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Final hour of the show. It is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4 for the next half an hour. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Dave Poulin. It is Mail It In Friday, and I'm joined by a man who never mailed it in during his career, because when you play in Philadelphia, when you play in Boston, the fans, they'll probably kill you if you mail it in, won't they?
You know what? Those two teams that I played for, I mean, I joined the end of the Broad Street Bullies and then that group of Flyers in the mid-80s. You couldn't take nights off because the other teams were so prepared to play against you because they were so intimidated coming into those two buildings. Mm-hmm. And I had a long chat with Chico Resch about it when he was playing for Jersey before we traded for him. And he said, you know, you get everybody's best game. It doesn't matter who they are because they're afraid of being embarrassed physically. And they won't just lose the hockey game. You're going to beat them up too. And so when that happens, guess what? The host team can't take the night off either. Mm-hmm. And it makes you so much better. I mean, we were a hard team to play against. One year at home, Mark, we were 32-4-4. Jeez. I mean, think about that. I'm driving to the Spectrum. I'm like, okay, we're going to win today. It doesn't matter how much. And, you know, I mean, wow, we lost four games at home.
And here we are talking about the hub situations and what the higher seeds, what advantage there is for the quote-unquote home team. Right. And in hockey, there is the last change that you get. Basketball, I don't, you know, there is when you do have the crowd, but when you don't have a crowd, it's really mitigated or it's really
neutralized. Yeah, I think that's really minimal.
But you hear this all the time, and I know you can speak to this. Home ice doesn't mean the same today in the NHL as it did during your playing days, especially when you're talking about buildings like the Spectrum and also the Boston Gardens, which was a different building. Like it was like having to go play on someone else's pond and you don't realize there's a little bit of a bump there in the corner and you can kind of ricochet the puck off of it and it's into the slot.
It was so great to play in. And you know, it was one of three buildings, Chicago and Buffalo being the other two, that was a smaller ice surface. Mm-hmm. So instead of 200 feet long, I believe it was 185, and that area was taken out of the neutral zone. And so you just think about it. You'd cross your own blue line, and you were crossing the other team's blue line. And back then, you couldn't make a two-line pass, obviously. So that area was so condensed and so tight, and it led to physical play. But, you know, I think of the Chicago Stadium, and you could see it in the Last Dance, a little bit more significant in hockey, to go to the home locker room, the visiting stairs. Locker room, you went down a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
So you'd be traipsing down the stairs in your skates, you know, and that building in Chicago was so vertical. And that national anthem, the pipe organ, the pipes were built into the brick wall. Mm-hmm. So when they played the national anthem, the building shook. I mean, it was so great. And I love that building.
It's so funny, too, because I never went to the Chicago Stadium, but I've been to the United Center numerous times. And that's a big arena. It's one of the biggest in the NHL.
Yeah, 23,000.
And when you look at the pictures of when the two arenas stood next to each other before they demolished Chicago Stadium and how tall Chicago Stadium was, as you say, it was so vertical. And I can picture
a tiny footprint.
Yeah.
Tiny footprint.
But and
in Philadelphia as well, Mark, because the buildings were all, they moved the football stadium and the new baseball stadium right down beside the new hockey rink.
Right.
But the old Spectrum was still in place. It looked like a guest house.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tiny, the footprint, absolutely tiny. But talk about a home ice advantage, and it doesn't exist. Too many of the buildings are exactly the same now, almost cookie cutters from each other. And it's taken a lot of the home ice advantage away.
And one of the requirements for the hub cities are arenas where they have numerous dressing rooms and dressing rooms that are at NHL caliber level. Was the visitors' change room in the Boston Garden?
Oh, in the Boston Garden,
at NHL change room was caliber level.
Terrible. It was terrible. Like, and they jacked the heat way up, so it'd be a million degrees in there. It was tiny. No, it was awful. It
like
was
imagine that
awful.
Still was a factor today with social media and stuff, like players tweeting out, you know, before a game, in the middle of a game, we're in a sauna here getting ready for the third period. This is great. Love it. Like, there would be.
Well, I remember when Mark Cuban bought Dallas and, you know, a revolutionary young owner in the NBA, and he made the visiting locker room unbelievably nice, like unbelievable. Big plush towels, and because he wanted visiting players to say, if this is what the visiting team's locker room is like in Dallas, what's the home team locker room like?
Yeah, you need all the advantages you can get. It's like so when you're going into a big game and you're playing a superstar, you need every edge. It's like when you would go into a game and you're facing Carlo Colaiacovo, you needed every single advantage to beat Carlo Colaiacovo, who now joins us on Overdrive. How are you, Carlo?
I'm great, boys. Yeah, they would have got a stick in the mouth if they ever tried to take it. That is me.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. You're wrapping up a much deserved week off. You had a little.
What have you been up to? How's the vacation been? You're a cottage guy now?
Pooley, I've always been a cottage guy, but talk about like taking a vacation at the right time, right place and right time. Mm-hmm. This week off was absolutely what me and my family needed. I feel
good
so refreshed, so energized. And, you know, the weather was beautiful. The scenery was incredible. And just being around family, I think that's what everybody was most excited about. And hopefully you guys are taking advantage of it, too, the fact that we get to see some of our family members right now. But just a breath of fresh air, considering how hard it's been the last couple of months. And I tell you what. It's Friday. I woke up this morning. It felt like Saturday. And I'm like, holy cow, I'm totally lost. But it was awesome. It was awesome. I rented a friend's cottage, and me and a couple of my family members went down, and we had a blast.
Are you a lake guy now? Because we had that debate last summer, remember?
It's funny you say that. So everybody went in the lake except for me. I sat on the dock, and I was ripping the lips off of fishes.
Okay.
I had a great time fishing. I was, you know, in the shallow part, helping my kids, you know, run into the water and stuff. But my brother-in-law, who was with me every morning, he'd go in, he'd bring the soap and stuff. He'd jump right in and shower in the lake. And I'm like, nah, that's not for me.
Wow.
Yeah, not a lake guy. I'm not, you know what? I'm a pool guy. It's like I told you, Mark. I'm not even an ocean guy. I don't like swimming in stuff that I can't see underneath me.
I know. Well, it's funny. You can handle 250-pound NHL players hacking at your back and going into the corners with them, but you go into a water and there might be a smallmouth bass, and you're like, I'm out of here. I can't handle this. So.
Yeah, no, it was a good week of fishing, too. The fish were biting. My son got to catch a couple fish, too, so... That was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
A lot of fun. A lot of barbecuing and a lot of good times with family.
Well, Carlo, we've held off most of the major decisions until you returned,
just
so you didn't miss anything.
Thanks for that. We've been doing the show all week waiting for info, and then we were told, not Carlo.
The most exciting thing we have is that you caught a fish.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that came up, and I know you follow the NBA closely, Avery Bradley from the LA Lakers made a decision not to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a health issue with his son, and he doesn't want to, you know, take any risk at all. And I immediately thought of you and with Leo and your situation.
Yeah.
And if you were a player in today's game, how do you think you would handle that same decision?
You know, Pooley, I'm so glad you asked me that, because I asked my wife that question actually yesterday, because I did see that Avery Bradley comment, and I've seen a lot of the speculation that has come out in regards to the concerns, especially the spikes that are going on in Florida. And I asked my wife, I said, you know, if I was still playing and this situation was something that I had to encounter, would you be okay if I went back to playing? And she goes, well, what would be any different than any other year? I mean, we make the sacrifices because we know this is your profession. We know this is your job. We know this is what you love to do. And ultimately, she would leave the decision up to me. And, you know, that's something that we've always done throughout my career. And the way I would look at it is, yes, there would be concern because of my son. I obviously wouldn't entertain bringing my family into it, but I've sacrificed being away from my family even during a normal season. I went to play in Europe without my family for a couple months. You know, there was a time I signed late in the season and I was living on my own for the longest time. And, you know, I've made those sacrifices to be around for my family. But I think when you're talking about this time right now, I would still feel comfortable knowing that, you know, the health and safety protocols are there to eliminate as much risk as possible. I mean, you're talking about daily testing, right? This is such important information for every athlete, because at least you know what you're dealing with. And, you know, you talk about what the NBA is going through and, you know, the billionaire bubble that they're putting together. You have to think that's probably the safest place to be rather than out in the real world. Mm-hmm. So for me, myself, obviously there would be the discussion, but I would absolutely, because it's what I love to do, I would absolutely put myself out there back to playing, because who knows when another opportunity like this might come again. You know, your career, I mean, I played 14 years in the NHL, and it's so hard to believe. It goes by so fast.
And, Carlo, you talk about that and the security and safety of the bubble, and there's a great chance that it is safer to go into the bubble than it is to go to the grocery store.
Well, I mean, right
at least
now,
I spoke with a player today. Right, yeah, I spoke with a player today on an American team who'd flown into his city, and he was tested for the first time, and he has to pass four straight tests before he's allowed to skate with the guys. Yeah. And, you know, much more diligent. I haven't been tested, and, you know, and we haven't been tested in this house at all. And we're, you know, when we go out, we do wear masks to the grocery store and the drugstore and those things. I don't wear it on the golf course, but I wear it when I'm out of the house. And you are safer in that environment. And it's interesting with the golfers, because they talked about the golfers that had contracted it and the caddies, and that wasn't at the course, they didn't feel. So they've done their tracing and tracking, and they felt that in each case it wasn't at the golf course, that it was contracted.
And Pooley, that brings up a great point too, because I think what this 4 months has done for everybody in our world, it's allowed us to sit back and learn and educate ourselves about the proper things that we need to do every day, you know, the more focus on life awareness, self-awareness. And these are all important things as an individual if you're going to enter a team environment like that. Because, you know, I was having this conversation today with my father-in-law, who I'm out here with right now. And I said, you know, because he's telling me too, well, what if something happens? And I'm thinking to myself, why would you want to put yourself as the player in that situation where you're the reason why there's been an outbreak because of something you did? Like, think about the embarrassment that person has to live with. So I would think that every person that, or every player that's about to enter into this phase is going to take it seriously and going to understand, you know, the effects of one of their mishaps. And again, you know, what we've seen so far in sports right now, this is good education for the leagues that are about to start up, because they're seeing how it's getting contracted. They're seeing how it's being handled, and they're going to see, you know, what the repercussions are going to be. Hopefully there's none of them, but they're going to see sort of, you know, how it plays out, so that when the NHL and the NBA and even MLB are starting back, they know how to handle these outbreaks and know how to contain them so that it can be as smooth as they possibly can during the most most difficult circumstances.
He is the co-host of First Up. He'll be carrying me on that show next week, Carlo Colaiacovo.
Oh, can't wait, buddy. Can't wait.
I know. It's been a while.
It has. I see you got quite the tan, though, man. Where have you been?
It's my backyard.
planting those tomato plants, eh?
You sounds like you're joking, but I'm serious. I have a vegetable garden now.
Hey, man, you're marrying into an Italian family. Wouldn't expect any different.
We could do a whole segment on constructing a vegetable garden and an 88-year-old no-no, like really doing more work than I did. But anyways. Artemi Panarin, the comments that he made yesterday where he, you know, the topic of escrow, what player loves escrow? That's obvious. But, you know, he doesn't want to come back until that's addressed and escrow is gone. And from a player's perspective, I totally understand that fight. Uh-huh. I wonder about the timing. The argument can be made for either side. But what did you think about Panarin coming out just over 2 weeks before a training camp is supposed to begin?
Well, first of all, I'm surprised at how good the converse or the sentence that he came out with. I find it hard to believe that he's the guy who actually wrote that, because, you know, it seems so legal in the way that it came out.
With English being a second language, you're saying?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it sounded like a very smart thing to come out and say. But what I really question when I read that is, how informed are the players throughout this process? Because everything that I know and I would imagine everybody in the hockey world knows this, is that part of the phase three and maybe in phase four return to play is going to involve a new CBA. And so, I mean, unless I'm wrong or maybe that gets put on the backtracks, mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think that's what needs to be done. There has to be a new CBA because things are, you know, out of the ordinary right now. I understand escrow. It's something that's not fun to pay. I mean, as an athlete, but you know, as Pooley would know, escrow has allowed the system and the salary cap and the NHL to thrive. To really understand it, I know players don't like paying a lot of it, and they would want the owners to at least absorb some more of it. But every team has to spend $60+ million. Mm-hmm. In a normal world without the cap, you wouldn't have that sort of same level of pay scale across the league, and it's allowed players like Artemi Panarin to make $11.6 million and get bonus money up front. And you know, I can understand the frustration around it, but again, if I'm a player right now, this is the last thing I would want to bring to the forefront after everything baseball just went through. Because you have to think that hockey has been sort of civil in their approach and they've negotiated in good faith to return to play. Mm-hmm. If hockey players start picking this fight, you would hate to think of how ugly it could possibly get. But in saying that, I believe there is something to be said there about escrow, because as high as the potential that players could possibly play coming out of this, I would side with the players that the owner's got to absorb some of it too.
Well, very much so, Carlo, but you know, I don't want to get technical at all here, but each summer, to do with the inflator, the players have chosen in most years to take the 5% false inflator to increase
the salary cap. Yeah.
And so you're a free agent next summer and you say, well, I've voted 5% for the last 4 years for the other guys who are free agents. It's my free agent summer. I'm voting 5%. In the last couple of years, they've decreased that artificial inflator. Mm-hmm. And the reason that escrow is as large as it is because the players have voted to artificially increase that over the last 6 or 8 years, or the cap wouldn't be what it is right now. And so, you know, so just with your buddies that you hang with and you keep in close touch with, how much are they focused on the CBA right now, or how much are they focused on the back to play rules? Because that's a lot of information to digest for two different things.
You're absolutely right. And I think it's half and half. There's guys that are focused on both because there is concerns in both areas. You know, one of my best friends is Alex Pietrangelo, and he's the biggest fish on the UFA market right now. And that's one thing that, you know, he talks about and he thinks about. And obviously the return to play. I mean, his wife's pregnant, and it's supposedly she's supposed to have the baby during the return to play. So there's a lot of things that's going through his mind to return to play, but he's obviously excited about returning to play. But again, it goes back to what I first said when I commented on Panarin. It makes me question how much these players are really informed about what's going on, because all the talk has been about the health and safety protocol that's going to take place in the bubble. We don't even know where the hub cities are, you know, where the players have to plan to play. But you would think too that players would have the same concern about escrow coming out of this, because, you know, part of the reason, let's be honest, sports returning is great. A big reason why they're returning is the business aspect of the game, mm-hmm. so that players don't have to pay back so much escrow next year. That's part of the return to play, is they're trying to limit that cost. But you would think that more players would pay more attention to it. I don't know if I would come out publicly and address it, because nothing good ever comes out addressing stuff publicly, but you would think that there has to be that internal conversation going on, that it is a concern for both health and safety and for escrow and the growth of the game.
Carlo, it's been great catching up with you, and while we wait for hockey to return, golf has already returned, and I'm not talking about the Travelers Championship. I'm talking about the face-off at TPC Toronto.
I love it.
I want you on the record right now. Who do you have your money on? Team Duffy or Team Dubas?
Wow, this is a tough one. By the way, I'm so glad an event like this is taking place. just because of the profile of the guys that are taking part. I mean, you talk about Duffy and O'Neill and the battles that they've had. You know, the unknown in Kyle Dubas. I don't know how good of a golfer he is. Pooley, maybe you do. But
I do not.
Jerry D, I think, is the catalyst here. Because I've always said when you do an event like this, you should have a comedian involved to keep things light, to chirp people, to keep people off their game. I think if Jerry D can bring his A game, he'll definitely throw the old dog off, which will throw Duffy off, and which maybe give the winning team to Dubas and to Jerry D.
So if he's anything like he was yesterday on our show, Carlo?
I heard, and I was dying of laughter.
I didn't even ask him a question. I think I just introduced him, and then he went off on Duffy.
Well, have you seen the Twitter war those guys
oh, yeah.
are creating?
It's really funny.
God, it's hysterical. Yeah. It's hysterical.
And it's turning people who are normally so even-keeled and polite into like just Dan like Duffy called you Carlos on Twitter because you're at him.
Like, he's calling Jerry like Jerry with a J. I'm like, his name right, come on.
Oh god.
He's chirping Duffy for being a teleprompter guy. Yeah. Duffy's throwing jabs at Dubas for being a math guy. Like this is what an event like this needs. Mm-hmm. You know, throw the golf etiquette out the window. You need the blowhorns in the back. You need talking in the backswing. You need jabs. You need all the banter you need just to make it a fun event. Because not only is it a fun event, it's for a great cause. And that's ultimately, you know, who's going to be the winner out of all this.
And as we wrap up here on TSN4, our viewers can see the Duffy tweet where he had the poll funniest actor on Mr. D and essentially was naming everyone. And then the fourth one was anyone but Jerry.
Yeah.
And then Jerry wrote, to me, this is just cruel and uncalled for. This came out of nowhere. I don't know James Duffy at all. I'm not sure what point he's trying to make with a poll like this. Going to keep being positive. I wish you well, Mr. Duffy. Like,
oh, it's classic,
so good.
Man.
Yeah, he's so good.
I've been texting Jerry. I've been telling him, you got to ramp up your chirp game, buddy. Come on. We need more.
No problems
more.
There. Anyways, Carlo, enjoy the rest of your vacation. I look forward to listening to you on First Up next week. And then at the end of
Thank
the week,
boys.
Working with you. It should be a lot of fun. All the best to you and the family.
Thanks, boys. Have a great weekend, okay?
You got it.
You as well, Carlo.
Carlo Kuliakovo, a co-host of First Up, still doesn't love swimming in lakes, but had a great time at the cottage.
Well, loves getting up early in the morning, and he brings it every morning at 6 a.m., and that's
an admirable
trade, I'll tell you what.
I have been fortunate to fill in for Michael a bunch of times on that show, and you know, you come in around 5:15, 5:30, everyone is... Well, you can expect what everyone's like, kind of rubbing their eyes. Yeah, like what happened
level.
In the third period there? And Carlo comes in, and I would 100% every single time. All right, guys, what's going on? How's everyone doing? It's like, how are you in this mood right now? And he just loves being here, loves talking sports, loves being with the team. You know,
he's been a great addition to the team.
He really has. So great to catch up with Carlo Kuliakovo. Coming up next on TSN 1050 and the TSN app, Mark Sacchino, the host of Golf Talk Canada. So much to talk about when it comes to the Travelers Championship, the face-off at TPC Toronto, and much more. We say goodbye to our viewers on TSN 4. Coming up next, it's SportsCenter with Jennifer Hedger. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. Mark Rowe alongside Dave Poulin. And our next guest, I've been told, and I said it was a credible source, he is the best golfer in the TSN family. Let's bring him in. Mark Sacchino, the host of Golf Talk Canada. Mark, can you confirm that you are indeed the best golfer to work at TSN?
I that's not my style, gents, to be out there making those kind of claims. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'm the only professional under the TSN banner and the only one that's probably played a couple of professional events across his years in this game. So, you know, I guess going off of that, you could say yes, but that's not my style. We have some good players, but hey, listen, I'll put it this way. I like my chances. I'll play anybody if they're up for a game.
Essentially, what I want to say is, Duffy screwed up by not picking you.
That's a given. We know that's a given. Like, I was just trying to be modest here, but if Duffy's out to win, and we had him on Golf Talk Canada on Saturday morning. We're doing the weekday shows this week as well. So it was yesterday we had James on. We were just having some fun with him, and James was kidding around. He said, actually, Mark, I got to tell you, I think I might have dropped the ball. If I was out to win this thing, I probably should have called you. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow.
Well, I can tell you, Mark, you're allowed to say you're the best golfer. You're probably not allowed to say you're the best hockey player. That would be a safe bet.
I guarantee that.
We got a few guys that might be a little better.
That's a tougher crowd to beat.
Yeah, I got to say, there's a lot of things I'm not allowed to be the best at in the TSN group. Mm-hmm. Hockey would be one of them, so certainly.
Oh, that's awesome. So, Mark, we've got our eyes on the Travelers Championship, mostly because of Mackenzie Hughes and shooting a 60 yesterday. He follows it up. You know, 68's not bad. It's eight shots worse, but it's, you know what I mean? Like, anytime you're under par, you'll take it. He's one shot off the lead. On a macro level, how do you assess Mackenzie's game as someone that kind of week in and week out can be in contention?
Well, it's funny because, you know, we go back a couple of years and he probably would have been a guy that we would point to that was going to trend in that direction. You know, he had a win under his belt. He was mm-hmm. building confidence. And then, you know, last year, the last year and a half was not the year, a year and a half that we anticipated for Mackenzie. We thought there would be a growth period because when a guy comes out and has immediate success like that and plays well early, you know, there's a lot of things going against him. First, he's on a bigger stage than he's ever been before in his life. Quite often, he's seen most of these golf courses for the first time. So he's learning the golf courses. Not used to playing in front of that type of crowd. Not used with the microphones and cameras in your face 24/7. There's a lot of things working against the player when they first come out. Now, today's player is way more prepared than the older guard mm-hmm. when they come out now compared to before. But still, there are some hurdles. A guy finds success, you start to, you know, you see him building in that way. You start to, okay, we've got something here. And it didn't quite go that way. But you flash back, though, to earlier this season, before we pulled the plug at the Players' Championship, before March 15th, and you look at Mackenzie Hughes, along with most of Team Canada, Corey Connors, Adam Hadwin, Nick Taylor with the victory at Pebble Beach, they were all playing well. Mackenzie Hughes came awfully close at the Honda Classic to finding the winner's circle. So we had momentum. Everybody was tracking in the right direction, and then the plug was pulled. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me that Mackenzie Hughes is playing well. Obviously, a 60, no one knows when that's coming, and you can't predict a 60. But solid play, hanging around the top of a leaderboard, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Now, Mark, as a golfer, maybe a technical question. Would you rather be 60-68 and a shot off the lead, or would you rather be 64-63? Like, you know, would you rather have that big round, or is that emotionally harder to get over the big round and think you played lousy today because you shot a 68?
I like the steady Eddie. I'm with you. You know, at the end of the day, every shot over 4 days is technically worth the same amount when we add them up at the end. But I like, you know, that 63-64 where, you know, it feels more contained. It feels more under control, like you're the captain of your own ship. Whereas 60, although it is so impressive and it is extremely low, you know, when you look at the numbers on a 60 versus 68, there's a lot of streaky things that have to happen in a 60. For example, with Mackenzie Hughes, he was first in strokes game putting yesterday. He made over 140 feet of putts in one round. That's absolutely obscene.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Today, he falls to 84th in strokes game putting and only makes 67 feet of putts. So, I mean, there's a lot of hot and cold between the 2 days. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't land somewhere in the middle tomorrow, which is what he's going to have to do to stay in this golf tournament and content. But from a mindset standpoint, to your question, if I'm the guys at the top of this leaderboard, you know, if I'm Phil Mickelson, I'm feeling like, you know, I've had this under complete control for 36 holes right now. And if I'm Mackenzie Hughes, I'm feeling, okay, we had, you know, one of the hardest things to do in the world of golf is to follow up a super low round. We've got by that, but now I got to get this back in gear on Saturday.
And what a couple of days for Phil Mickelson. You know, yesterday it was announced that he will be in the U.S. Open, the six-time runner-up, and that's because of COVID-19 and the qualifying being shut down, and that they would expand the rankings. So he was 61st. They're taking the top 70 now. And oh, by the way, he shoots a 63 today. He's got a one-shot lead going into the weekend as a 50-year-old rocking those aviators. It's just, there's a lot to take in there.
There is. He looks great. Maybe he's going to be in Top Gun too. Who knows? You know, he looks awesome at age 50. He's hitting it a mile. His speed is as good as it's ever been. I think his entire game is as good as it's ever been, mm-hmm. with the exception of off the tee in terms of accuracy. And you know, we have always said over the years, even Tiger, for that extent, although Tiger has been a better overall driver of the golf ball than Phil. But even Tiger and Phil were never the straightest drivers of the golf ball in the world. Mm-hmm. But when Phil was in his prime and he was winning more regular, you know, on weeks he'd win, he'd find the fairway 60-65% of the time. When he's hitting it in the fairway 40% of the time, just forget it. You have no chance. It doesn't matter really what golf course you're playing. You know, there might be a couple of spots on tour in the desert that you can get away with that, but week in and week out, that isn't going to happen. You take a look at this week, he's close to 70% off the tee in terms of driving accuracy this week through 36 holes. That's all the story right now, right there. If Phil Mickelson puts it in the fairway, you know, he might as well be 30 years old because the rest of his game is still outstanding. And, you know, who doesn't like Hollywood endings, guys?
Yeah.
And Hollywood scripts. Phil Mickelson has got 6 second-place finishes in the U.S. Open. We all remember what happened back in Wingfoot in 2006. He had one hand on the trophy and blew up on the 18th hole. We're going back to Wingfoot in September. He's 50 years old. He gets in. What a story that would be to come back 14 years later and avenge that and get the only major that he's never won. You know, I'm Italian, guys. I'm emotional. I'm a bit of a romantic. I would love that. Absolutely love that.
Mark, we're all watching golf with such interest because they're sort of the leader in coming back to play. And this is their third tournament this weekend. And I think they've handled things very well. And, you know, you had Nick Watney the first week. You had a couple of guys coming out of that tournament, or the second week, rather, a couple of guys coming out of that tournament with it. How do you think things are going overall from a COVID aspect for the tour?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a massive success. And, you know, anytime somebody gets sick, it's hard to come out. And you know, Bob articulated this on our last show. It's hard to call it a success when someone's tested positive. I'm taking, to your point, a big picture approach here. With the assumption that all these people that have tested positive are young and healthy and are going to be fine. So with that assumption in place, I think it's a massive success. We've had 2,700 tests across 2 tours in 3 weeks. We had our 8th positive today. You know, if people thought there wasn't going to be positives, they should have, you know, their head examined. Mm-hmm. We're living in a pandemic, and we see what's happening in some of these states where most of these players live. And the tour can only control what happens, you know, Wednesday to Sunday. What these guys do on their off days in Florida, Arizona, or their weeks off, the tour can't control. So overall, I think it's a tremendous job. And I like the reaction and the selfless acts being made by professional golfers who tested negative but were around or potentially in contact with some of the positive tests. And even though they have multiple negative tests and have every right to put the ball on the ground and participate in the Travelers Championship, they chose to walk away because they feel it's the responsible thing to do to keep the game moving forward and to limit the risk of everyone involved. I'm like, what, you know, that's, I think to me that shows a great example of how all of this moves forward. If you think at all that you may have done something questionable, come into contact with somebody that might be a positive, have a symptom, don't feel yourself, it's at whatever it is, there's probably 10 boxes we could check. If any of those you think are remotely close, walking away is the right thing to do and doing the right thing. And so far, golf is doing that. So fingers crossed, this is the way this plays out for the next, you know, 6 months or so.
Mark Zucchino, the host of Golf Talk Canada, joins us on Overdrive. And you know, there are a lot of positive stories in golf right now, including the scores. And right now, the projected cut would see Bubba Watson, who went 69-68, pack his bags and head home after the second round. Like, And this is, I feel like this has been a trend since they came back. Can you point to one reason or another why the scores have just been so low? And you know, like you're looking at a leaderboard right now that has minus 13, minus 12, minus 12, minus 9. That's crazy.
Well, it's interesting. This week's a bit of a different animal because the Travelers Championship has historically always been a shootout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we were doing our Stardom Sit'em segment earlier this week, our Fantasy League stuff, we were looking for guys that aren't afraid of making birdies, that average high birdies per round. Bombers tend to do well here. It's funny you bring up Bubba Watson. You know, he's won three times here and is going to miss the cut. So that's a bit of a head-scratcher as well. But if you remove this week out of the equation, because the Travelers Championship is the first tournament on the new schedule that actually is in exactly the same spot it would have been if COVID never existed. Mm-hmm. This was the Travelers week. If we look at the two previous weeks, and last week especially, those tournaments are being played in times of year where we don't normally play. When you get to Harbortown, Hilton Head, the week after the Masters in April, that golf course is a lot firmer. The winds blow in the afternoon. Those holes that are exposed by the water can play a lot more difficult. 17 alone, the flag is just usually leaning over on 17. Players are a little tired after the week at Augusta. Those things kind of keep the scores in check. You look at last week, you play in that golf course in June, the ground is soft. Players are they're full tanks, full of energy. They're not wiped out from the week before or already playing on the tour for 4 months. The wind lies down this time of year in Harbortown. Like this, the flag on 17 on Sunday was limp, mm-hmm. and you know, guys were making throwing darts. Webb Simpson being one of them. So it's a mixed bag of things that are certainly leading this way. All that being said, though, guys, I'm surprised. I'm surprised how much they've come out ready to go and sharp and prepared. I think, you know, all signs point to most of these guys taking the break, the COVID break, to work on their games and stay sharp. I don't think there were a lot of guys in the basement eating Doritos. I really don't.
It's really an interesting mental, physical aspect, though, because while they were doing the physical part of it, they weren't doing it under the stress of playing in a golf tournament. And
no,
they may have been physically doing things they weren't, you know, guys like Gary Woodland and well documented, you know, the diet and the workout regimen, and obviously Bryson DeChambeau. But the question we have to ask is, are we going to see Tiger, and is he just preparing for a late summer, mm-hmm. early fall run when, you know, when the bigs are coming?
Yeah, I think if you look at the schedule, guys, I think Tiger realizes that he is going to play a lot of golf from August 1st to the end of September, assuming we still have a Ryder Cup, which I don't think is happening. All reports believe that the Ryder Cup is going to be pushed back. But when Tiger was setting up his schedule for this reboot, he was setting it up with the anticipation that there was going to be a Ryder Cup. So that means he's got to play the PGA Championship the second week of August, three playoff events in terms of the FedEx Cup, U.S. Open, and a Ryder Cup. That's six tournaments in 2 months. That's more golf than we've seen from Tiger Woods in a condensed period of time in quite some time. So I think he's just saving the energy, saving the back. We're likely to see him once, I believe, before the PGA Championship. All signs would point to the Memorial, where he's had so much success over the years at Jack's Tournament, which would mean that I would believe that he would probably skip the World Golf Championship, which is at the end of July, at the FedEx St. Jude Classic, which is now a WGC event. My gut would tell me that Tiger would probably skip that. So fingers crossed, we see him at Memorial. That's the knock the rust off tournament for Tiger. And then assuming he is as healthy as he looked the last time we saw him in the charity match with Brady, Mickelson, and Manning, assuming, you know, he's feeling as good as he did that day, then you would anticipate Tiger to go pedal to the metal, mm-hmm. from the PGA Championship onward.
That'd be a lot of fun to see. Always great to have the best golfer in the TSN family on the show, Mark Sacchino.
I love it. I love it.
I'm enjoying the expanded Golf Talk Canada schedule. All the best. And hopefully we were talking about a Canadian winning this weekend in Hartford.
Oh, that would be great. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great night.
There you have it. Mark Sacchino, the host of Golf Talk Canada on Tiger, on Phil, on the Pride of Dundas, Ontario, Mackenzie Hughes, who's one
on
shot
being
off the
very
lead.
Humble on his own game.
Yeah.
Very humble about his own game.
Yeah, my source tells me, like, he's one of those
Your
guys.
Source, I love it.
I know.
You're the insider.
I get to be like an
My
insider.
Source.
Yeah.
It's my source.
Yeah. You know my source, anyways.
I do.
Yeah.
Like, I do.
Mark's one of those guys that doesn't have a handicap. Like, he's plus one or plus two. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
When there's a plus in front of your handicap, you're a really good player.
Anyways, I need to get some lessons maybe from Mark. Anyways, we're going to wrap up the show when we return. Looking forward to a big weekend, including the NHL draft lottery, as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. We are wrapping up a very successful week here on Overdrive. Mark Rowe.
A lot of pressure filling in for those guys, Mark Rowe.
Man,
a lot of pressure.
You brought it, Dave. Like,
that's some big skates to fill.
Fired up Friday. You know, you were there. And
versus mail it in Friday.
Yeah.
Which they have the corner on. No one can come close to what they do.
That is true. And O's working on his golf game right now. We had him on this week, and he said he shot like a 74 and a 75. So
it'll be fun. It'll be fun. I would expect they'll all play well. That's what I would expect.
So we can all agree that will be fun. Is the draft lottery is going to be fun for a team or two, and then really disappointing for a bunch of other teams.
Well, it's so funny because you, in sport, you get to compete for what your successes and failures are, and yet in the draft lottery, you get to stand and watch. And there's ping pong balls floating around, and they truly affect the fate of so many people. Mm-hmm. You think of that, you know, I think back to after the lockout and the ping pong balls and Pittsburgh and Anaheim and Sidney Crosby and Bobby Ryan. And you just think about how many lives were affected in that in a circular fashion.
Oh, my goodness. Like, yeah,
you
think
know,
of
Pittsburgh
Anaheim's...
goes on to... Yeah, think about it. I mean, had they plugged... you know, him in with Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry and that group of guys at that point, and, you know, and then Pronger and Niedermeyer. I mean, that might have been a dynasty.
I'm going to say they would have won more than one cup.
They very well might have. So tonight, as we watch with great interest, and there's so many great young players in this upcoming draft, the fate of cities, of people, of coaches, of managers, of owners.
Think of what it could do to the Battle of Ontario. If the Senators get Alexi Lafreniere, and you have Lafreniere and Austin Matthews, and you have...
What if they go 1-2 tonight, Mark? What if they go 1-2?
What if the Leafs are team whatever...
Ottawa goes
1-2. Oh, if Ottawa gets the first two?
What if they go 1-2?
They're the new Edmonton Oilers.
Wow.
Step aside. We got this thing.
And they have the Islanders pick. The Islanders could lose to Florida.
Right.
And it's only top three protected. And they could end up with the 8th, 9th,
whatever,
10th pick.
Imagine that. 1, 2, and 8. What are we going to do in this draft? We could do whatever we want, essentially.
Tell you what, my third pick in that case would be the big Russian goalie, Askarov. That would be my pick. I'd roll the dice on the goaltender. The guys say he's the best in the draft since Carey Price.
Yeah.
I would take that chance that I was locking up three positions for a long time to come.
Yeah. I feel like you need a couple goalies and you hope one sticks. It's such a crapshoot.
Well, they've got a couple of young guys in their organization, actually, that they like. Yeah. They've got a couple of young guys they like.
Okay.
Hogberg is another one they like. So, but it'll be a fun night to watch and a fun night to, if you're one of those teams, you're dreaming right now, boy.
Right.
You got an hour to go. You are dreaming.
Well, the sun is not shining into your office like it was yesterday, but the weather should
be
nice.
No, the set people came. The set people came and reconstructed the set.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I got those guys, the technical producers.
Yeah, you look good, my friend.
I got those guys.
It's been a lot of fun working three shows with you this week. I hope you have a nice weekend, and hopefully we're working together soon.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Have a great night.
Okay. Brian Hayes will be back at 4 p.m. on Monday, and he will chat then.